"Horace," said Dumbledore, relieving Harry of the responsibility to say any of this, "likes his comfort. He also likes the company of the famous, the successful, and the powerful. He enjoys the feeling that he influences these people. He has never wanted to occupy the throne himself. He prefers the back seat. More room to spread out, you see. He used to handpick favorites at Hogwarts, sometimes for their ambition or their brains, sometimes for their charm or their talent. And he had an uncanny knack for choosing those who would go on to become outstanding in their various fields. Horace formed a kind of club of his favorites with himself at the center, making introductions, forging useful contacts between members, and always reaping some kind of benefit in return. Whether a free box of his favorite crystallized pineapple or the chance to recommend the next junior member of the Goblin Liaison Office. Harry had a sudden and vivid mental image of a great swollen spider spinning a web around it, twitching a thread here and there to bring its large and juicy flies a little closer. "I tell you all this," Dumbledore continued, "not to turn you against Horace, or, as we must now call him, Professor Slughorn, but to put you on your guard. He will undoubtedly try to collect you, Harry. You would be the jewel of his collection, the boy who lived, or, as they call you these days, the chosen one." At these words, a chill that had nothing to do with the surrounding mist stole over Harry. He was reminded of words he had heard a few weeks ago, words that had a horrible and particular meaning to him. "Neither can live while the other survives." Dumbledore had stopped walking level with the church they had passed earlier. "This will do, Harry. If you will grasp my arm." Braced this time, Harry was ready for the apparition, but still found it unpleasant. When the pressure disappeared and he found himself able to breathe again, he was standing in a country lane beside Dumbledore and looking ahead to the crooked silhouette of his second favorite building in the world, the Burrow. In spite of the feeling of dread that had just swept through him, his spirits could not help but lift at the sight of it. Ron was in there, and so was Mrs. Weasley, who could cook better than anyone he knew.
"If you don't mind, Harry," said Dumbledore as they passed through the gate, "I'd like a few words with you before we part, in private, perhaps in here."
Dumbledore pointed toward a run-down stone outhouse where the Weasleys kept their broomsticks. A little puzzled, Harry followed Dumbledore through the creaking door into a space a little smaller than the average cupboard. Dumbledore illuminated the tip of his wand so that it glowed like a torch and smiled down at Harry.
"I hope you will forgive me for mentioning it, Harry, but I am pleased and a little proud at how well you seem to be coping after everything that happened at the Ministry. Permit me to say that I think Sirius would have been proud of you."
Harry swallowed. His voice seemed to have deserted him. He did not think he could stand to discuss Sirius. It had been painful enough to hear Uncle Vernon say,
"His godfather's dead!"
And even worse, to hear Sirius's name thrown out casually by Slughorn.
"It was cruel," said Dumbledore softly, "that you and Sirius had such a short time together. A brutal ending to what should have been a long and happy relationship."
Harry nodded, his eyes fixed resolutely on the spider now climbing Dumbledore's hat. He could tell that Dumbledore understood, that he might even suspect that until his letter arrived, Harry had spent nearly all his time at the Dursleys lying on his bed, refusing meals and staring at the misted window, full of the chill emptiness that he had come to associate with Dementors.